AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. A troubled 22-year-old man sat in his car late last week making a chilling YouTube recording.
Hi, Elliot Roger here.
A video he called his retribution.
This is my last video. It all has to come to this.
This was stabbing three people to death in his apartment Friday night before Roger cruised the streets of the college neighborhood outside UC Santa Barbara, killing three others, wounding or injuring seven more before he took his own life. Pope Francis will host the Israeli and Palestinian presidents at the Vatican next month, part of the effort to revive the peace talks. At the end of Mass in Bethlehem today, the Pope offered his invitation to the two leaders, Vatican Communication Advisors Greg Burke.
Pope Francis has no intention to get involved in the political aspects of the peace process, but he wants to get everyone praying for it.
Voters are casting ballots in Ukraine's presidential election. AP's Maria Danilova reports the voter turnout differs depending on whether the ballot is being cast in western or eastern Ukraine.
While polling stations are very busy in Kiev, only a fraction of polling stations are able to function in the east of the country, where pro-Russian rebels with guns have pledged not to allow this vote to take place.
Children whose parents died while serving get a chance to talk with others.
7-year-old Lizzie Yagi likes talking about her dad.
At the same time, it feels like you want to cry.
Marine Major David Yagi died when Lizzie was 18 months old. It's not something her friends at home in suburban Baltimore understand.
It feels like you're the only one there, which you pretty much are.
Which is why she and other military survivors like Joseph Tierney like being at this weekend's TAPS Good Grief Camp for kids in the same situation.
Nobody will judge you because they know how you feel.
That's the AP, Sagar Magani. This is AP Radio News. Tens of thousands of fans packing their way into the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for today's Running in the Indy 500. Tom Aiken with the preview.
For the second consecutive year, Ed Carpenter will start on the pole for the Indianapolis 500, but many eyes will be on Elio Castroneves as he tries to become only the fourth driver to win four Indy 500 races. Six former winners are in the field of 33, including defending Indy 500 champ Tony Kanaan. Another former winner, Dario Franchitti, will drive the pace car on a day predicted to have nearly perfect weather. Kurt Busch will try to win two races in the same day, starting at Indy and then jetting to Charlotte for a NASCAR race. Tom Akins, Indianapolis.
In the NBA's Eastern Conference Final, the Heat come from 15 down to beat the Indianapolis Pacers 99-87, taking a 2-1 lead in their best-of-seven series. On the ice, LA Kings go up 2-1 with a 4-3 win over the Chicago Blackhawks in their Western Conference showdown. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Discover what it takes to become a pilot at the National Air and Space Museum Stephen F. Udvar-Hossy Center in Chantilly, Virginia. Join them for the 10th annual Become a Pilot Family Day and Aviation Display. See dozens of visiting aircraft on display for one day only. Enjoy hands-on activities, story times, and kite flying demonstrations. Saturday, June 14th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., sponsored by Booz Allen Hamilton. WTOP is a proud media sponsor. Visit airandspace.si.edu. for details.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1-T-1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. And we have a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Audrey Lustre, who's the president and owner of a company called Silver Spoon Caterers, Mark Slavin, president and CEO of Mark Park, Fiona Gathright, who's the president and CEO of Wellness Corporate Solutions, and finally Nick Dowling, the president and founder of High Heat Real Estate. Joining us first is a young lady by the name of Audrey Lustre, who's the president and owner of Silver Spoon Caterers. Audrey, what is Silver Spoon Caterers?
Well, we are a full-service corporate and special events caterer.
What does that mean, full-service corporate special events caterer?
We do everything. We do from the work of an event planner, stage person.
All around the this notion of food?
A notion of food.
Yeah.
And to make it look good and taste good.
And for everybody to have a great time.
Exactly, and make everybody happy.
So is food the center of your life and the event here?
It's my passion.
How did it become your passion?
Well, it's really fried ice cream.
Fried ice cream.
Fried ice cream,
Tell
yes.
us a little bit about fried ice cream and when did all this happen?
Well, I was born in the Philippines. And I came here when I was 6 years old in the West Coast in California. And I actually had my uncle, and he owned a really nice, fine restaurant in Laguna Beach. And one night, he brought my family and myself over just to, you know, just to see the restaurant, to see how it works.
How old were you?
Six.
6 years old.
6 years old.
Okay.
And we went to the back, which was the kitchen, and everybody was, like, working. All his staff, his chefs, and busboys were, like, going everywhere trying to fulfill all these orders that he had. And he said, oh, enough of this. So let's go to the front. And in the front, it's like, the first thing I saw was this fire with, like, a metal bowl on top and had ice cream. And it was called fried ice cream. I couldn't figure it out how the ice cream would not melt with the fire in the very bottom. So I just figured, you know what? That is what I wanted to do.
If this is too cool not to do, I have to figure out how to do this and make a business out of it.
Exactly. And plus, it tasted good.
Yeah. So
and
at six, you knew what you were going to
awesome,
do.
Awesome. Yes.
At six, you knew what you were going to do for the rest of your life.
Yes.
But you didn't go to restaurant school. You decided to learn how to run a business a different way. Tell us about that.
Well, I actually went to Catholic University in Washington, D.C., and I studied accounting and finance with a minor in computer science.
And why did you decide on accounting? If you're going to start a business and you knew what it was going to be, why accounting?
Well, I figured accounting was the best you can do to start a business, is because really, if you do like business management or ad, it's straightforward, I believe. It's common sense. And
so
accounting,
you need to know the numbers.
You have to know the numbers.
How did you know that at a young age, that I should start out with learning the numbers?
Well, actually, I learned that from my mother. She's an accountant.
Ah.
So, and she did all the books and everything else, and I figured if you have your own business, you have to do your own books.
Was your mother part of a family business?
Yes, she was.
So your family has been in the family business forever?
Forever, actually, yes. And my grandfather he was a very good businessman.
Your grandfather?
Yes, he did. He was.
Was he in the Philippines?
He was in the Philippines, and then he is more like real estate,
mm-hmm.
and universities and everything else. He was into giving back to the community because the community gave back to him.
But your grandfather died when you were a young person, right?
Yes. I never really quite met my grandfather because he died at a very young age.
Yeah.
So it was just really my grandmother.
Right.
And she took over the position of my grandfather.
And that person had an enormous influence on you, didn't she?
Oh, yes. I saw her as being really a strong-willed woman who really didn't have much of a choice but to take over the business. So she had to do it, and she did it really well.
What do you remember most about your grandmother?
My grandmother was very strong, very, very strong, determined, and nothing could get in her way.
So she was also a mother while she was running these businesses, right?
Oh, yes, yes, definitely. She had 7 children.
So you got a degree in accounting. What'd you do right after college?
I went to New York City to work for a large company and as a staff accountant.
Why New York City?
Well, actually, my parents told me if you wanted to excel or do your best, and New York City was the place to go, is because they say you have to live. You can live and you can work in New York City. You can live and work anywhere.
So you took their advice.
Yes. I had to do the top. I couldn't do the bottom. I couldn't do the middle. I had to do...
What is it about you that has to take on the toughest challenge?
Well, actually, it's my father. He was the one. He taught my sister and I, because we're minorities and we're women. So he said, don't let anybody send you away. Always do the best you can. So he taught us, it's like you take your weakest point and always make it your strongest. So if you keep on taking your weakest, make it your strongest, weakest, strongest, at that point you'll always hit like something level and you won't have a weakest point.
And that's been your life strategy, to take
exactly.
on the tough things to make you stronger.
Exactly.
That's a heck of a strategy. When did you realize that that's the way to go? Was it around the time when you took on something tough and you got stronger?
Well, that's actually how we grew up, because I saw that in my parents. Mm-hmm. I saw that in my grandmother. I saw it in the whole family, because they always, they struggle. If they couldn't do anything, they have to make sure that they will actually achieve it.
Right. So tell us about New York. What was that experience like for you?
It was interesting. I really love New York. I love New York City. I love the life. I love everything about it. The business is fantastic. I mean, gosh, but
it was tough living there, though, wasn't it?
It was. I actually lived in Jackson Heights, Queens, and I worked in downtown Manhattan. So the commute was like an hour and a half, hour if you're lucky. But there's interesting characters that decided, I could just follow her. So I've been chased a few times from one subway to the other. Yes. But that just made me much stronger and faster. And now I can run sprints.
So, in addition to accounting, you learn how to run fast.
Yes, very much. Very much.
So at what point did you decide it was time to leave New York and come here to Washington, D.C.?
Well, I wasn't happy. I was bored. I mean, accounting is fantastic. It's great. But I thought, you know, that's it, you know.
Uh-huh.
I would want to start my own business. And probably the best place to start it would be around the Washington, D.C. area.
And how did you come to that?
Well, I went to school in Catholic University.
Right. And so you knew the area.
I knew the area. And in actually, Northern Virginia is what you call the Silicon Valley of the East.
Right.
And it's also you deal with the government, and the government will supposedly never go bankrupt. So
you figured that's a good place to start a catering business.
Excellent place to start a corporate catering business.
So tell us about the early days of the business. You started it back in 1997. What was the first day like?
Oh gosh, actually, I was not even quite catering. It was more like a coffee kind of shop, like a close. Like a Panera.
Right.
And that's how we started, because I figured, you know, I'm going to go heads on with Starbucks and Panera.
Because what the heck, it's the toughest thing in all of my lessons.
Exactly, exactly. And there's nothing I can't do. Well, that was an eye opener. After a year, I figured maybe not.
You'll try a different route.
Exactly. But around where I am in Fair Lakes area, the companies actually came to us and said, hey, you know, your food is really good. It would be awesome if you actually delivered and catered to us because we needed a company who's very reliable and the service was excellent. So we actually paid attention to our consumers.
So that was in 1997. You grew it up, and now you're a 50-person employee company.
Exactly.
What's the toughest part about running the business today?
Well, I found out that really the toughest part would probably be the staffing. It's just because people are coming from everywhere. It's a cultural kind of, like, I don't know, friction.
Right. So, the folks that join your company are probably first-generation immigrants, and they're trying to learn how to get along together? Is that it?
Well, yes, basically. They're also first. They're also second. It's just different personalities clash. You know, it's just like getting married. It's like getting married, you don't know. You always clash. So it's just trying to form a large, nice family.
Do you like most about the business?
Making people happy.
How do you do that?
By giving them excellent service and delicious food.
What's your proudest moment up till now, Audrey?
The proudest moment? Oh, I have so many proudest moments.
Give us one.
Proudest moments is really every catering job that we do. And when everything at the end, and our customers will come up to us and say, this is awesome. This is excellent. This is the...
Great.
That's amazing.
What's the website address?
The website is silverspooncaterers.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Audrey Lustre, who's the president and owner of Silver Spoon Caterers. Don't forget to visit our website at executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, and we'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
Our clients say that it's the three P's: our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified, and they're fun to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is, perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and joining us for this segment is a young man by the name of Mark Slavin, who's the president of Mark Park. What is Mark Park?
Mark Park is a commercial parking company located in Washington, D.C., and we build, design, and manage commercial parking facilities all throughout the Mid-Atlantic region.
How big or small is the company today, Mark?
We employ about 250 full-time employees and about 400 or 500 part-time employees.
And you started the business back in 1996, I understand?
1996.
So what were you doing before that?
I was working in the family business most of my life.
And the family business was parking cars?
Parking cars.
Why get out of the family business?
I had a vision that I could do something on my own. I had just a desire to go out on my own and cut my own teeth to see if I could make it.
So this was a family business that had been around for a long time, very successful in this town.
Many, many years, and into the early 20s, my grandfather started it.
So was that a risky thing to do, to leave the family business, the security of the family business, and start your own almost competing business?
It's very risky. I had a lot of people telling me I was crazy.
Why'd you do it?
I just had it's in my blood to try to do my own thing, and I've always been told I'm a little thick in the head, and, you know, I was the type of person that just wanted to do my own thing and not be told what to do.
Right. So it was your uncle that you were working for at the time, right?
Yes,
my uncle. And what was that conversation like when you told your uncle, hey, I think I need to go on my own?
He's you know, very accepting of it. We went out to lunch, actually, that day, and I just looked him in his eyes the way I always have and said, I think we've been butting heads, and we're going in different directions, and I want to try to do my own thing. I'd like to move on and see if I can do this on my own and develop my own ways.
So how did you get started? Did you fund it yourself? I mean, what was the first days like?
That's a great question. I had $10 in my pocket. And I walked down to Wachovia Bank at 20th and L, and I asked to see one of the officers. I said, I'd like to open a new account. He said, okay. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, well, we need some money. So I reached in my pocket, and I took the $10 out, and he gave me this look. He said, what's this? I said, there's the $10. Can you open the account? And he said, well, normally for a business account, we need $1,000. I said, look, let me do all the paperwork. Will you take the $10, and tomorrow I swear I'll come back with more money? And I did, because I had opened a parking lot, and we were taking in the cash from the parking lot each day. So the next day I walked in with a deposit from the parking lot. I said, see, I'm back. I've got more money for you. And that's how I started it. That's how I started the bank account.
You made a great statement earlier in the green room today as we were getting to know you, that you grew up in a family with some privilege. And so, and your saying was, I took the silver spoon and then ran with it.
I did. I was very fortunate. My grandfather and had become very successful at a young age. He had worked very, very hard when he had come back from World War I, fighting in Russia, and he was an entrepreneur and had developed his business working very hard. I was born in 1956. So at that point, he had become, you know, successful and had given us the ability to live a good life. And my father was working very hard after he came back from Korea. So I tell people very honestly, I was born with, you know, some means. We were not poor. We were living in Bethesda, Maryland, and I was going to good schools, and we had good clothes,
right,
and we never wanted for anything.
Yeah, and you're this really hardworking guy who likes work. How does that happen?
I was exposed to hardworking people. Everyone I knew worked hard. My father worked hard. My mother was worked hard around the house, cleaning. My stepdad later on, I was exposed to my stepdad working very hard.
But you hear stories of young people that come from families like the one you came from, and they don't have that work ethic. In fact, they're kind of lazy and unmotivated. How come that didn't happen to you?
I don't know. It's in my blood. I'm not sure. I don't know how to answer that. I'm not sure where. I just saw it. I enjoy
right. How,
work.
How young were you when you started working?
I was mowing lawns when I was 7 years old.
When did you get in the parking business?
I was 12.
Parking cars.
Let me tell you about that. That's a little bit of a fib. Well, I was actually parking the car at 12, but by the time I was about 13 or 14, I was actually, yes, I was parking the cars. My duties were to check and clean and be a cashier and really learn from the bottom up. What had happened is one day I was really getting anxious. I said, this is going to be fun. I got to park. I got to physically start parking these cars. And I wasn't supposed to. And I ended up parking the cars, and then I actually damaged a couple cars. So that's a whole story in itself. But I was tall enough, and I could park the cars and get away with it. By the time I was 13, 14, I was parking the cars.
Yeah, but, you know, you ran afoul of the law apparently, too.
Well, yeah, we had a little issue on one of the parking lots where I actually got arrested. But that was all straightened out on the lot. They never actually took me to the police station. But
So that's a very rich experience, parking cars and dealing with the law and all of that. How do you think that shaped you as a 13-year-old?
Just the values and the experiences and the work ethic that I had developed. I'm proud of it. I enjoy it, and I enjoy the people. I saw people today. I was walking down L Street this morning, and they'd still say, "Hey, Mark." And then I actually sent a mass email out a couple of weeks ago about something that I'm doing, and a friend of mine emailed me that's 84 years old. He says, "It's Ed. Hey, Mark, how you doing? You remember you parked my car when you were 14, 15 years old?" He sent me an email.
That's
so
awesome.
The relationships are just unbelievable.
You also made a statement that you had something to do with bringing Ethiopians into this community. Tell us about that.
Well, we were having employee shortages during the late 70s, and at that time there was a huge influx of African people coming into the country. And I had been exposed to a few of the Ethiopians that we had hired. So I began to understand their culture. And I was approached by a number of them that asked me to sponsor them, and I did. I think the joke at one point was I sponsored like 20 of them. And I remember signing off on some of the documents that said, well, you're responsible for X amount of dollars if something happens. And I think it added up to like something like $1 million, and I was maybe making $15,000. So that's a little history with that.
You're also telling us you had the misfortune of losing your father at a young age.
I did.
At 10, I think, right?
Plane crash.
How bad was that?
Well, it was a long time ago. I was a young guy, and
yeah, you told me though. How were you told?
Oh, the state troopers came to the house. So it was my brothers and I and my mother, and I remember we kind of ran away because she basically said, "What'd you guys do now?" You know, because it's not like we were getting arrested at 10 years old, but we got in a little bit of trouble, and the police had come there before about maybe something we did.
Well, this time they came with some different news.
This time they had come with a little different news.
How do you suppose a 10-year-old responds to that, and how does it shape a guy?
Well, I live my life every day as if it's my last, basically. I enjoy life, and all my friends will tell you that, my family, the kids, my children, my three, my wife, they'll tell you that I live it to the fullest. I enjoy life, and I live it with the motto of you don't know what's going to happen,
right?
Minute by minute, you just don't know.
What would you say the toughest thing you've ever accomplished is?
Toughest thing I've accomplished?
Across all the years, the toughest thing I've ever accomplished.
Well, the business has been a challenge. I mean, just starting from scratch. I mean, I'm not supposed to be here in terms of the business because I went into a business that was really controlled by large companies.
Right.
And I broke into that and established our own ways and showed some people that we could do it also, even though we're small.
Right.
You know, we had the ability to compete.
How about your proudest moment up till now, Mark?
Well, my proudest are my children, raising them. I'm married to a beautiful woman that supports me, you know, with all my stuff, let's say, And then I'm really proud of the business and the people and my relationships and my friendships. I really enjoy my friendships.
Yeah, sounds like, what's the website address?
www.markpark.com, and the Mark Park is all C's.
Okay.
M-A-R-C-P-A-R-C.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Mark Slavin, who's the president and CEO of a company called Mark Park. I'd like to thank him for this interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
And your name is?
Dana Theus with EmpowerCoaching.com.
And what makes EmpowerCoaching.com special?
Well, we help mid-level and senior leaders turn professional success into personal development.
Tell me more about that. What do you mean?
Well, today, leaders to succeed at any level need to master soft skills. They need mm-hmm. to be able to manage and lead people at all levels, and that means they have to get along with people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they also need to master the process of learning to get along with people, and that's mm-hmm. what we support them to do.
And you're supporting who to work better or to do what?
Well, for example, a professional who aspires to be in a senior leadership position mm-hmm. needs to be able to negotiate their relationships
mm-hmm.
with their staff, with
mm-hmm.
their superior, with their
mm-hmm.
peers.
Mm-hmm.
They need to communicate confidently in all kinds of formats,
mm-hmm.
you know, one-on-one and in meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And we give them the resources to learn to do that and then be better at it.
And these resources are both one-on-one as well as online?
Yeah, we have a lot of programs online because mm-hmm. this kind of support is usually cost prohibitive, and we mm-hmm. make it very affordable by providing a lot of online resources as well mm-hmm. as personal support.
How can I learn more about what you're offering and get in contact with you? Is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's I-N, mm-hmm. PowerCoaching.com.
All right, excellent. And your name again is?
Dana Theus.
This has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and joining us for this segment is a young lady by the name of Fiona Gathright, who's the president and CEO of a company called Wellness Corporate Solutions. Tell us a little bit about Wellness Corporate Solutions, Fiona.
Hi, so thank you for having me. Wellness Corporate Solutions is a company. We're headquartered in Bethesda, Maryland, and we put in place employee wellness programs for companies throughout the United States. We help them lower their health care costs, improve the health of their employees, and that results in happier and healthier and more productive employees.
When was the company founded?
2004.
And how big or small today in terms of employee size?
We have about 100 employees.
So you're not a healthcare provider or a benefits provider. You do something differently.
Yes.
So what is it specifically that you do for a company?
So we go into companies and we do health screening programs primarily. So we'll go into your company and we'll screen your employees for cholesterol, blood pressure, diabetes, metabolic syndrome.
And do you do that because the insurance companies ask you to do it, or do you do that because the employer has invited you in?
It's always because the employer has invited us in.
And what's their motivation?
Most of our clients are really motivated, first of all, because they care about their employees and they care about their employees' health. Often the secondary motivation is to try to control their rising health care costs.
How did you get the idea for the business?
I got the idea for the business. My husband and I had had another company that we sold in 1999, and I'd stayed home. I've got three children. I was home with the kids, and I was doing lots of different things. I was a Girl Scout troop leader and doing lots of different things for my kids, and I decided that I really needed to do something for myself. And I really love working. And my husband and I had had a company, and I liked owning my own business. I didn't think I'd be able to work for anybody. I didn't think I'd make a very good employee. So I thought about, what I should do. And I really cared a lot about nutrition and fitness, and that was one of my passions. So I was in the gym. I was talking to one of my girlfriends, and she said, I've got an idea. I know what we could do. And I said, well, as long as it doesn't involve a lot of employees, I'm happy to consider it. So we talked about starting a company where really we would do health fairs and events for companies. And we started that, and we went in and brought chair massage people and skin cancer screening people and blood nurses to do blood pressure. And that was in 2004. And at that time, we were just starting to see the rise of the obesity crisis. Healthcare costs were starting to rise. It became a thing where a lot of companies were talking about that. And we were in the right place at the right time. So we basically morphed into an employee wellness company, and you know, the rest is kind of history.
Where are you from?
I was born in London. My mother is Nigerian. My father was Scottish.
Uh-huh. Tell us about your mom.
My mother grew up in a village called Arochukwu in Nigeria. They didn't get running water or electricity in that village till the 70s. And she was raised by Scottish missionaries. And she got a scholarship to go to the University of St. Andrews in Scotland in the 1950s. And that's where she met my dad.
And you're very proud of your mom.
I am very proud of my mom.
What makes her such an important figure to you?
She is a really strong woman. She's definitely a role model. She was the first. She's had a lot of firsts. She was the first in her family to go to college. She was the after college. She came back to Nigeria, and it was still a British-run country, and she became the highest-ranking Nigerian woman in the British government in Nigeria. Funny story about my mom is I had three brothers and sisters, so there were four of us. And when we moved to the United States in 1969, she went back to school to get her PhD in economics. She didn't tell my dad. He was busy traveling for his job. And it was April one year in the early 70s, and she turned to my dad and she said, "Throw me a party in May because I'm graduating. I'm getting my PhD." And to his credit, he threw her a party because what was he going to do? And so...
And he didn't know up until that point that she was in the program.
He did not know.
That's unbelievable. So in what way do you think you've been shaped and influenced by your mom?
My mother always taught me to be who I am, not to worry about what other people thought. I mean, if you think about it, she was a Nigerian woman who went to school in Scotland. There weren't very many people who had dark skin in Scotland at that time. She married a white man in 1959. They moved to the United States. We lived in Maryland, but in 1969, it was illegal for my parents to be married in Virginia. And so my mother really taught us that to be who we are and not to care about what other people thought.
What did you learn from your dad?
My dad was a wonderful human being. He read a lot. I gained my love of reading from my dad. He took everybody at face value. When he went to Nigeria to ask my mother's parents if he could marry her, they said no. And to his credit, you know, they said no because he was poor. What could he give them? He wasn't going to give them he wasn't going to give them goats or anything. So, plus they were scared. To his credit, he learned Igbo. He learned my mother's language, and he won her parents over. He did marry my mom against their wishes, but he did win them over.
What was it like growing up in a mixed race home in the United States?
I think that, because I'd lived in Brazil and Scotland and Nigeria before I moved to the United States, I'd grown up in places where we were either different or not different. In Brazil, we weren't necessarily different. It was tough, but I think that I wouldn't have traded it for anything.
Tough in what way?
It's tough being different, I think.
At what point did you realize, hey, I'm a little different and I'm going to have to deal with it?
I think I realized that in fourth grade when I came here. When I came here as a mixed race 8-year-old who had a very strange accent having grown up in Brazil and Scotland.
How did you handle that?
I was very shy, actually. I was extremely shy, and So I handled that by, you know, reading a lot and sort of retreating into an inner world. But
you're not shy now.
No.
You're very strong and you have a wonderful, powerful presence. How did you get to there?
I would say, again, it was because I had really good role models. Not only my mother, but my Scottish grandmother was a very powerful influence in my life. She was an entrepreneur, actually. She had a grocery store. And so it didn't dawn on me, actually, till much, much later after I started this company, that I actually did grow up in a family of entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you like most about running the business?
I love my employees so much. I love mentoring and motivating young people. All of my employees are really passionate about what we do. They're passionate about health and wellness. I love to see them grow in their careers and develop as people and as workers. And that to me is the best thing about having a business.
How would you characterize your leadership style?
I would say my leadership style is more of a supportive and motivational style than a dictatorial style. I'm not a person who naturally gives a lot of detailed directions to people, but I do like to see people figure out a way to get things done, and then I'll give you a lot of applause when you really when you get it done.
Where do you want the company to be in 5 years?
In 5 years, I mean, our stated goal is to be the number one biometric screening company in the United States. So I feel like we're well on our way to that, and so that really is where I want to go.
And how about you? What's the next for you? Have you even thought about that?
I have thought about that, actually. I have thought about that. I think in my next life, I always talk about all my different lives, but I think in my next life, I would like to be a yoga teacher, and I would also like to mentor young women entrepreneurs.
What would you say to a young woman listening in right now, maybe through some of the background that you've had, some adversity, and thinking about making her own way in the world, what would you tell that young person?
I would tell that young person the same exact thing I tell my daughters. I've got a 24-year-old daughter and a 20-year-old daughter, and I tell my daughters every single day, and I really truly believe this, you can do anything you want to do, and it sounds like a cliche, but it is absolutely true. If you just put one foot in front of the other, you can do whatever you want to do.
Thank you. What's the website address, Fiona?
www.wellnesscorporatesolutions.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Fiona Gathright, who's the President and CEO of Wellness Corporate Solutions. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offit Kerman. What is Offit Kerman, Doug?
Offit Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options, and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offutkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my next guest, who is Nick Dowling, who's the president and founder of a company called High Heat Real Estate. What is High Heat Real Estate, Nick?
High Heat Real Estate is a company that develops and manages and owns vacation luxury single-family homes. So if you have a family that wants to go to the Outer Banks of North Carolina, Orlando, multi-generational, and enjoy a great week at a great house, one of our properties is the kind of property you'd want to go to.
How'd you get the idea for the business?
When I was a kid, I grew up in a middle-class family, and you know they were all about nonprofit types of things, universities, arts, things like that. But I had parents that had great instincts for real estate. And we had a place in Cape Cod that my dad had bought, and it was beautiful, and we loved it. And it also made tons of money for the family. And I realized that here was a family that really was just a middle-class family, but they really generated most of their wealth through real estate, and we enjoyed it. And I said, that stuck with me, and I said, I got to remember that.
Yeah. When did you start the company?
Started it fairly recently, so 2010, and had by 2009 was looking actually just for a second home for my family, and we saw something in the Outer Banks, and the real estate prices had come down, and the rents had stayed up, and we said that looks like a great opportunity. And the more I looked and started getting into what the numbers look like financially, I said, you know, this is a great investment, and I enjoy the process of finding the right house or building it or developing and designing it. And that's that creative outlet combined with the financial piece of it that really made it an interesting business.
And I understand it's not the only thing you do professionally. What else are you up to these days?
Yeah, I really started as in the policy, politics, international relations business, and I worked in government in the 90s in the Clinton administration, and then have been in the government services business pretty much since 2000.
Yeah, why get into politics?
It was just one of those things where the reading and watching about the geopolitics of the world really fascinated me.
When did that happen for you? How young were you?
I think part of it was as a kid growing up playing games like Axis and Allies and diplomacy and things like that with some of my geeky friends. it gave me a little bit of that. But also around the dinner table with my family, we just had a family that talked about ideas and what was going on in the world and what was important about that.
And somehow you got inspired to take it in that direction that you took it.
Yep. That led to a government services business. And then as a result of that, and being a serial entrepreneur, just someone who likes starting businesses, when I started to get into the real estate piece, I really wanted to take that. And I get bored easily, so
yeah.
You know, government services to real estate, it's fun to try these new challenges.
So you're a serial entrepreneur. When did you start your first business?
My first business was actually when I was about 8 years old. I was selling chocolate chip cookies that I made in my parents' kitchen and then hauled them out to the little street corner where my dad, who was a scientist and had a laboratory in the summer, all the employees from the labs came out at lunchtime and bought chocolate chip cookies from the kid of one of the scientists and sold them and then went to the beach.
How many cookies did you sell in a day?
I'd make about 200 and hopefully sell them all. And
And you did that at 8 years old?
I did that at 8 years old.
How did you get the idea to do it?
I like chocolate chip cookies. I think it started with that. And I don't know. I just had an idea of wanting to do something to make a little money in the
so
summer.
So what kind of an environment would you say you grew up in that allows a kid to do something like that?
It was a great environment. This was on Cape Cod, and where I spent summers with my dad. I was child of divorced parents, and so I spent the summers with my dad, and was looking for things to do, and had that entrepreneurial bug, and that's what created it.
Mm-hmm. So 200 cookies sounds like an awful lot of cookies to make for an 8-year-old. Tell us a little bit about the logistics.
Well, my stepmother helped me with it, so she would take me shopping, you know, a couple times a week, and we'd get all the different ingredients. And initially, she did a lot of the help in terms of figuring it out. But chocolate cookies aren't that hard to make once you sort of get it down. And so I would do that, although my stepmom would point out that she probably had to do a lot more of the cleanup in the kitchen than really she should have had to do.
So $200, if it's a buck a cookie, is a lot of money for an 8-year-old. What'd you do with it?
I have no idea. Part of it was, paying expenses. It probably wasn't quite $200. I think I would discount as soon as I was getting bored or getting itchy, and 50 cents. If a cookie was broken, I would sell it for a discount. And I had one guy who always came to buy the discounted cookies, and one day he came and he said, "Do you have any broken cookies?" And I said, "No," and he's like, "Oh, I wanted one," and so I took one of the good cookies and broke it so I could sell it to him.
Looking back on it, how do you think that experience shaped who you are today?
I think it showed right away sort of that if you take a risk and take a chance to try to build a business like that, that it can be successful. And risk-taking has been sort of one of the things about my career that has always stuck with me as something that can pay off. And you have to be willing to, that if you fail, it's a learning experience and you go on to the next one as quickly as you can, but you never know when something's going to succeed. Maybe not the way you planned it, but...
Right. Not everybody has that relationship with failure that you have. What is it about failure that is not so daunting to you?
I think I got a lot of failures when I was growing up. And then when you learn to survive a failure,
Of a marriage?
Some are difficult things being resilient enough in terms of a family that breaks up and what that makes sort of steals you as a person. And other personnel challenges, you take those and you turn them and say, okay, I can survive that. So therefore, taking a chance on creating a business or going out and trying to get into politics, things like that, it makes you feel like, hey, if it doesn't work out, I know I can survive.
Right. What was, so you were active politically in the Clinton years, right?
Correct.
What do you remember most about that experience?
It was really glamorous to be as a political appointee working in the Pentagon, which you see in the movies and I'd read about and was amazing. And then later in the White House, just coming to work every day, you'd pinch yourself and say, I can't believe that I had this opportunity to do that.
Is there a story or a memory that stands out above all the others from those years that you can tell us about?
Well, one of them was we were working in Bosnia, Kosovo, and it was a high-profile issue, just like so many of the wars more recently have been. And so working in the White House, we had to work really long hours. And one night, I had a memo that was going up to the National Security Advisor, and the Deputy National Security Advisor was looking at an edit, and he had a question. And it was 1 in the morning, so he called my house to ask me, and I woke my wife and said, I need to talk to Nick about this. And she said, he's at work. This is 1 in the morning.
What did you learn from that experience that helped make who you are today?
I think we all hear a lot of bad things about politics and have our views about it. But one of the things that you see learn working, I think, in the White House is the drive and the dedication and the professionalism of people who are at the top of their game and who realize that the stakes of what they're doing is, and whether you're right or left, that you see that in the White House.
Why did you get out?
The Clinton administration ended. It was time to go do something else.
Yeah. So then you decided to take what you had learned and make it into a business?
Yeah. I started with another startup business, actually, working with them and learning from them, and then started my own in about 2002, and that was the government services business.
What is it about politics or government service that makes it for a good business?
I think it's an industry like any other industry, but it has some very peculiar aspects about its customer base. But the fundamentals are still there in terms of you have to have customer relationships, you have to have a product that they want, and you have to understand the nature of how to make that work. It's certainly a big industry in this part of the country.
What do you like most about what you do today?
I like the diversity of different things that I get to work on. The real estate stuff has been incredibly interesting because it's a creative outlet. As much as I like the government piece, it's very analytical.
How'd you come up with the name for the company, High Heat Real Estate?
My business partner and I are huge baseball fans. He's a Yankee guy. I'm a Red Sox guy, so we're always talking about baseball. So when we were looking for a name for the company, he came up with High Heat Real Estate, and I was too dumb to tell him it was a bad
name. That's
a
good name. How long do you want to be doing the other business?
You know, the future's a hard one to predict. There's a lot of stuff about my business that I love and want to continue, and I want to see it thrive. But I'm always inspired and
well, attracted
to new opportunities.
Let me ask it a different way. Yeah, let me ask it a different way. What's next?
Same answer, which is I wish that I knew. I'm looking at writing a book because I have some views about what I've learned in the last 20 years working on national security. I wouldn't mind going back to government service at some point. And the real estate part is really interesting to me. And I was talking to one of your other guests about one of my little hidden goals is to fund and organize an Olympic campaign in sailing, which is a sport that I did in college. But find a young kid who's gifted at sailing and say, let me be the CEO, and let's see if we can get you into the Olympics.
Oh, that'd be great. What's your proudest accomplishment up till now, Nick?
I think helping to bring about peace in the Balkans, just playing a little role as a policymaker in that. And you just think about the number of lives that you affect and how that works, that would be it.
Yeah, wonderful. What's the web address for High Heat Real Estate?
We don't have one yet, right. But I'll get you one.
How could someone find you?
You can go to my government services website.
And what is that?
Track me up that way, which is www.idsinternational.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Nick Dowling, who is the president and founder of a company called High Heat Real Estate. We've had a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Audrey Lestree, who is the president and owner of Silver Spoon Caterers, Mark Slavin, the president and owner of Mark Park, Inc., Fiona Gathright, the president and CEO of Wellness Corporate Solutions, and finally Nick Dowling, the president and founder of High Heat Real Estate. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for without you, we wouldn't have a radio show, and you can hear the show again on businesstalkradio.net. Until next week, this is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, tail-wagging, backyard-hanging, and, of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a Labish Terrier-Hound-Chihuahua-looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle. Simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Do you want to do more to help people in our community? United Way of the National Capital Area is gearing up for Do More 24, a one-day online fundraiser. On June 19th, you'll have 24 hours, starting at midnight, to give where you live and donate to the causes you care about. So on June 19th, go to domore24.org and donate to the nonprofits that serve the region. Get more info at domore24.org.
Discover what it takes to become a pilot at the National Air and Space Museum Stephen F. Udvar-Hazy Center in Chantilly, Virginia. Join them for the 10th annual Become a Pilot Family Day and Aviation Display. See dozens of visiting aircraft on display for one day only. Enjoy hands-on activities, story times, and kite flying demonstrations. Saturday, June 14th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., sponsored by Booz Allen Hamilton. WTOP is a proud media sponsor. Visit airandspace.si.edu for details.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of Federal Community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and Federal.